Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors, and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of Siege of Treblin, and I'm joined by my fellow writers, starting with Dirk Ashton.
Hi everybody, I'm Dirk Ashton, and I am the author of the Paternus Trilogy. Love it or hate it.
And Michael R. Fletcher.
Ah, that's me, I'm Michael R. Fletcher, I'm that guy, author of that thing.
Mike is pointing to a poster of Beyond Redemption behind him.
Very nice. If you're not watching the YouTube videos, then I'm just confused.
And we are joined again by the wonderful Sarah Chorn. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, do you want to just quickly introduce yourself to our listeners or viewers in case this is the first episode with you that they happen to be watching?
Yeah, I'm Sarah Chorn, and I write books, but I'm here to talk editing, so let's say I'm an editor.
No, nice. tell us what books you've written.
Nobody cares about what I write.
Yes, we do.
Of Honey and Wildfires is the one right now.
Yeah, and it's fantastic from what I hear. I haven't read it, I apologize, but I've heard it's fantastic.
Okay. I like it, but I'm a bit biased.
Sarah, thanks for introducing the topic of today's episode. That was great. You can come and have a job here anytime. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about working with a freelance editor, which Sarah is. And do you want to maybe just kind of introduce to us the role of a freelance editor when it comes to a self-published author's life, Sarah?
Yeah, so you send us your manuscripts and you get them as polished as you can. And then we tear it apart as kindly as we can. And we help you make it better. What I try to do when I edit is I try to go into every manuscript with, I just want to be as ignorant as I possibly can. So even if I know something about the book, I turn it all off and I walk into this thing not knowing anything. And then I channel my mother watching a movie on TV. And, you know, every 5 seconds, she's like, hey, what's that guy doing? Why is he doing that? Wait a minute. And so what you're reading in my editorial comments is really my mother. And you're welcome.
This makes so much sense now. Yeah. It all clicks. And she's like, whoa. Specify who are you talking about? Who's that guy? And I'm like, what? Oh, fuck. Okay.
Where are you going?
Exactly.
On the same
side. Oh my God. That's awesome.
Awesome.
I've never thought of that before, but yes, it's my mother. That's
wow. Great. Okay. There you go. No, I love that description because yeah, that is the perfect way of approaching it. You really want to go in totally blind and just, yeah, try to discover, you know, the story along. And that way you can
really point out anything that is a bit confusing or unclear. That is an awesome definition. I really like that approach. Mike, do you want to talk about how you've worked with Sarah in the past?
Sure. So, I mean, we've talked about all our own editing past crap previously. Basically, once a book has reached a stage where I don't know what to do with it anymore, it's not that it's perfect by any stretch, but I've hit the wall where I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I can't make this any better. I basically fired off to Sarah, and it changes a bit with each book. So there have been books where I'm more insecure about the story or the characters. So I might leave a couple of notes like, "Hey, can you keep an eye on this? Does the plot make sense? Are the characters weak?" Sometimes I feel good about that stuff. And I'll ask for more of a, what's the term, like copy edit kind of stuff, where it's like, what I'm really looking for is just cleaning up sentence structure, fixing my abysmal grammar, typos and that kind of stuff. So it changes from book to book.
You mentioned the copy edit there. Sarah, do you want to kind of, I don't know if you kind of like have different levels of editing that you offer to people.
Yeah, we should clarify that, because different people do different. Some people will do it all from, story edits down
the big picture stuff,
down to just proofing, right? And there are a few levels there, and people should probably know what those are.
That's a good idea. Yeah, Sarah, do you want to just sort of maybe talk us through the different stages?
Sure. I actually teach classes on this at conferences all the time. So it's a huge issue of confusion. New writers see all of this stuff and they have no clue what any of us are talking about. And we have all forgotten that people don't speak our language. So there's just not much information. There's a few phases of editing. And what I tell people is, just because you've finished the book doesn't mean you're ready for an edit. Usually what I require before I will even look at your sample is I need to know that you've had beta readers or a critique group or someone else read this thing. It has to have had someone else there before I see it. Period. End of discussion. Once I know you and I know your style and I trust that your quality is up there, I stop requiring it. But for new authors, I have to know. The reason for that is because having someone else look at your book is going to show you issues that you're not going to see. My issue with editing my own books, like I say all the time, is I'm too close to them and I get so lost in my own head that I just can't see the issues. I had to create this group of people who could pull my head out of my ass and help me see what I'm doing. So that was, but that is essentially what beta readers are, or a critique group or something. They're that wall there that keeps you from getting stuck in yourself. So it has to have that. Then you edit it again, and then you talk to me after that pass, and we can talk. There are a few different kinds of editing, and depending, I used to say all trad publishers did all of them, but they don't anymore. So depending on what you want for your book is really what's going to drive what passes of editing your book gets now, no matter what way you're going about this. But there's a few phases. So there's a developmental phase, and that's the people who will look at your manuscript and search for plot holes and pacing issues and are the characters fully fleshed out, all that kind of stuff. All of that, the material of your bridge, basically, is all in the developmental pass. So you get those notes back and you do the thing, and that's usually a lot of rewriting, so you will not get grammar notes in a developmental pass. There's no point. Because you're just going to rewrite so much. So you do all that, you send it back. And then usually it's a line edit. And that's what I really love. I love line editing. But
that's the same as copy editing, right?
Kind of?
That's different.
No.
Okay.
It's totally. Yeah. So see. Line editing is the flow. It's the flow of it. It's how the sentence looks. It's how it reads. Is this word evocative enough? Is so much of what I love about it is a lot of the developmental changes that people think are just these huge deals can be completely fixed by changing the wording of one sentence in a scene. So it's developmental, requires a focus for detail, and it's all about flow and syntax and all of that. And then after that, after all of that, is the copy editing and the proofreading. Copy editing's grammar, commas, making sure your character has green eyes through the whole thing, or we can follow the path of motion through a scene so characters aren't just teleporting from one place to another. And proofreading is making sure it's publishing ready. The proofreader needs to get it perfect. So that's that. And in indie, you don't have money to pay for all that. And a lot of freelance editors will offer it all independently if you want it like that. I have a few authors who do that. But not many. So most indie authors have the money for one editing pass, and I try to shove everything I possibly can into that one editing pass because it will be the only one like 99% of all indie books get.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
That is a really good breakdown.
Yeah, that's really good.
I kind of
really
went
good.
On for a while. I'm sorry.
No,
that's exactly
that.
What that's that exactly really what people really want to know and need to know. And even agreed. I was confused. Even I,
even Dirk Ashton
was confused between line editing and right. no, it's I've always just hired proofers. But the people that I've used, like Laura Hughes and Dale Triplett, have also helped with, you know, if they thought something was slow and if they thought something could be better, or they would, if they were struck by an idea for prose for a particular thing, they would put that in the side notes and stuff like that. The only problem with that is it makes it really hard to proof while you're doing the same thing, while you're doing that, I would imagine. So, I'm glad I'm here to have heard that.
I was going to ask Sarah, probably a big follow-up that listeners are thinking of right now is how much do each of these different passes cost? What kind of like typical ranges would you be suggesting that people kind of are looking for from an editor? Because we've had people on in the past, we had a listener on in the past who paid like $12,000 to get his novel edited, to get covers, all of that, which seemed very expensive to me and didn't kind of match my experience. So just so that people are kind of aware and so they're not going into this totally unknowing the costs, what would you kind of say are the standard costs for each
or at least a range.
Or a range,
You don't have to tell us your exact, because I'm sure you probably have different prices for different people. Like everybody.
Got the special mark price where it's $10 million per word.
It'll vary depending on who you talk to. I will say, if you look online and you look up like the editors' associations and the editors' guild, they'll have a price point. And I have literally never heard of one editor ever who took that seriously, because it's like just ridiculous. They were, I think for me, it was $55 an hour they were suggesting. And I'm like, who the hell is going to pay that?
Or a certain amount, like, per word.
Per
right?
hour. It was per hour.
Well, sometimes they do per word too.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. You can get them per word or per page or per hour. And it's really going to just depend on the editor. And there's pluses and minuses for each one. Usually the range for the per word, I want to say, is around 1 cent. Usually it seems to be where a lot of editors stick to be comfortable. Sometimes I know a few who are like 6 cents a word. So I'd say anywhere from below a cent to probably about 6, 7, 8 cents a word on the higher end. Per hour, there aren't as many.
Sorry, is that for like all passes, you would say? Or is that for just one of those passes? That you
mentioned? Usually for just one. So if you want an editor to do different passes, it's going to cost for each pass. I mean, that's work every time. Yeah. So usually what they'll do, like I know what I do for my authors who want that, is I will pay, they'll pay for the full price for the first one, first developmental pass. That's usually the heavy lifting. And then they usually want to proofread too. And I usually do that at like half price. So, because I mean, once you've tolerated me this long, you deserve a discount. so that's my thinking there. But a lot of them, it just depends on policy. Sometimes they'll make you charge you a full price for each pass. It just depends. Sorry.
No, go ahead, sir. What you say is always better than what I say.
Well, per page is different. I think most I see per page are usually a dollar-ish. And it's usually for people who are just starting out. I stuck with that too long, but I hate math, and that was just easier for me. I've transitioned to per word this year, and it makes a lot more sense to me. But
have different font sizes and different spacing.
Exactly.
I was going to say, just put your font down to size 6 and the margins.
Yeah,
zero,
and you have to make specifications.
Suddenly you get a lot on a page.
Yeah, you have to specify. There's a lot of. And I would make sure if I didn't get a document to the specifications that I required, I would change it and I would invoice them again. So it's not like you're getting away with it. They try, though. They try.
And some editors will just give you a bid. They'll say, how many words is it? It's 100,000 words. And they'll say, to do this, I would ask that amount of money. And then you always want to ask, well, how long do you think that'll take? Because you want to put that in your schedule. Well, and some editors are far faster than others
of editors,
because they do it full time. And
a lot of editors work that way too. I know I do. And I think every other editor that I've dealt with, they do too. If that option comes along and it's like lucrative and it seems like it'll work for both sides, I don't. Why not?
Or if it's somebody you have a relationship with otherwise or have worked with before. For those of you who are mathematically challenged like I am, I actually pulled up my calculator, and at 1 cent a word, 100,000 word manuscript would be $1,000 for an edit. At 6 cents, it would be $6,000. So I've paid. I mean, I see prices, new people coming in will sometimes say, I'll do your 125 or 130,000 word thing for $500, because they want to build up some credits or whatever. But generally, I pay between, $1,000 and $2,000 for my edits. But they're more than a proof. They're a good proof, but they are more than that. And that's kind of what you can expect to pay. And it is totally worth it. Totally worth it.
Particularly when you are starting out, like the value of editing in that phase of your career, I found to be immensely more useful because you really don't know what your blind spots are. You don't kind of fully understand your abilities as a writer. So getting a good editor early on is very useful for helping you progress. As you kind of like develop and get a bit further into it, the returns from editing may diminish a bit, but there's still always going to be hopefully some useful insights depending on who you've gone with. I was just going to add for context. I know Dirk, you mentioned how much you pay your editor. I kind of lucked out with my first few books, and I think I paid my friend like about $200 to edit it. And she was like super happy with that and did an insanely good job. So I wouldn't say that's a very standard range. Like that is probably in hindsight, like a very low figure, but was very happy to do it and was a friend. So if you can find someone like that who, you actually have like a personal relationship with and they are very good at writing as well, then like, good job. It's probably mm-hmm. not the norm. So don't mm-hmm. assume that you can get like a professional editor for that rate.
Yeah. I have
Joe, two, you were going to say something?
I know two authors that their wives do it for them and they do an absolutely amazing job.
Nice.
They just amazing. What was I going to say? I was going to bring some. Oh, I was going to going back to self-editing. We didn't talk about like Grammarly and Pro Writing Aid, which can be very, very helpful tools.
Pro Writing Aid is awesome.
But they can point out when you repeat things, when you do mirroring, whereas you basically say the same thing twice worded differently. They can point out a lot of stuff, but they do not. Replace a live editor at all.
Yeah, they're a useful first pass, but they're not a good substitute for.
And they are not that reliable for proofing because they can't tell the difference.
I've never found them terribly useful.
Some people I know use them. And
I've tried a couple,
helpful.
And I'm like,
yeah, I don't use them. But I know people useful. That find them really useful, like Jed.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I haven't used it for recent books, but for the first couple of novels, I found it very handy. And I think that is a good progression because what they do is they make you aware of the kind of mistakes that you're making over and over again. So, for instance, one of the most useful features of Pro Writing Aid is the ability to show you when you are repeating words. So you might use a word like, adroitly or whatever, which is a very like kind of
87 times.
Yeah, you might use it 87 times in the space of one chapter. Because it was just in your head for whatever reason. And a word like that stands out. So readers are going to probably get thrown out of the manuscript. So Pro Writing Aid will kind of go through and tell you, hey, it's like only 100 words before when you were using this thing. So
I will say...
Kind of... Yeah, yeah.
I will say, if you're going to talk about cutting one phase of editing, because very few people can afford all of it. If you're going to talk about cutting it, and even my editor friends who specialize in this agree, the one that you want to cut for cost purposes is copy editing, because you can usually get that well enough done on those free services like that. Hmm. What readers will forgive are commas in the wrong places. What readers will not forgive are glaring plot holes that they walked right into.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're talking about this, the scale of editing, what's going to be more important is going to be the developmental side. You can use like beta readers or friends who like to read, or, you know, just say, put it on your Facebook. Hey, anyone want to read this thing and tell me what word I use too much? You know, and someone will say, yes, they would love to do that because they can. So there's ways around that part of it.
Mm.
That usually, if you want the weighted end of editing, it's going to be all on the developmental side.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, absolutely beta, I use beta readers for that. And that's long before it ever goes to an editor. You know, and you know, like I think for book three, I had 35 people beta readers, and maybe 20 responded, and maybe 6 had really good things to, because sometimes people don't know, they're like, I loved it, I loved all of it, it's fun, it's great. You know, or I wouldn't change a thing. And that's cool to hear, but it doesn't really, I don't know if it really helps. But there are a couple people that I have, two or three, that are really, really, really good at it and will, and fix things. They make the book better on that, for exactly those things you're talking about, Sarah. So I think a lot of that is taken care of by the time it ever gets to an editor. So a developmental edit isn't as important at that time.
I think what's useful to think about with editing is, in a sense, there are diminishing returns to each pass. Like the consequences of not doing a proofread, for instance, is like someone will leave a review on your book saying that you had a typo on page 52, which, spoiler alert, is going to happen even if you did have a good proofreader.
Mm-hmm.
The consequences of not getting the developmental edit right and not getting the bigger picture stuff right is people don't finish reading your book because there's massive plot holes and it's boring. So,
and if you're self-publishing, you can go fix that typo.
Yeah, but you can't fix, you know, a massive structural issue with your book. So it is good to front load that stuff. So thanks for bringing that up, Sarah. I was just going to say that with the pro writing aid thing in particular, like having to go through so many times my book, realizing that I was repeating words, it kind of just like drummed it into my head to not do that. And so what I found is that over time, pro writing aid became less useful to me, but that's because I was internalizing a lot of the lessons it was trying to like warn me of. So Dirk, maybe that's been your experience with it as well, but that was my personal experience. I've never used Grammarly, so not too sure how that compares. But what I will do is if you go to our website, wizardswarriorswords.com/tools, I'll make a page that will just have links to all these different things that we're discussing so that you can check them out if you want. On that page, I'll also mention any other tools that we kind of use during our writing as well. Cool. So that's been another good episode. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, if someone wants to... if someone is like a writer out there and they want to hire your editing services, what is the process they go through to do that?
You can find out all about me and how to contact me and all that at, what is it called? SarahChorns.com.
Awesome. And there's just like information on there about like what they need to submit to you, that sort of thing. Cool.
Yeah, everything.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us again for a second episode. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for joining us.
And for the rest of you, we will see you next week. So thank you for listening or watching, and keep writing. See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.